You're listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer Series 2024. Artistic Direction, Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring. The series is co-funded by the European Union in the frame of Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is Nettie Nyganen. Known to Impulstanz audiences as part of a number of Florentina Holzinger's productions, she first showed one of her own performances at this year's festival. Her piece, The Myth, Last Day, a pseudo-archaeological excavation turned punk concert, is an exercise in how history is constructed.
Hi, Nettie. Thank you for doing this, for talking to me. Very nice to meet you. I saw your piece yesterday, of course, and I thought about like how to enter this conversation. I decided on like going like a little bit of a not personal route, but describing like what my viewing experience was. Comes with a bit of a risk, of course, because maybe it has nothing to do with your thoughts at all. So feel free to just scream stop. This makes no sense at all, but. Yeah, I had a couple of weird days last week, so I went in with like a bit of like a fragmental energy, I'd say. And your piece in its like strange mixture of chaos and care, I would say, caught a lot of that and somehow made a lot of sense to me, at least on an like emotional level. Especially how you treat objects and material and how important they are, and especially this notion, or maybe this like fantasy that if assembled correctly, everything would click, perhaps, or like things would be different, or the person would be different. Like for example, there are like times where I know that I can, where I feel like I can only like, for example, wear certain items of clothing, mostly then like loose things from like coarse materials or something, because I feel like anything like tight or like shiny or clean would demand an equal level of like tightness and cleanliness and like shininess from like me or my body or something. So like watching you roll in the dirt for an hour, very like diligently like assembling these objects around you, like there was like a very like great level of comfort in that for me. But towards the end, then you sort of like delivered this fantasy and then also broke it in a way, because you keep repeating this sentence right before your punk rock performance and also during it, this phrase, constructions cannot halt the decay. So perhaps you could, I don't know if this makes any sense to you, but perhaps you could like expand a bit on that notion that assembling things in physical space around you like holds a certain transformative potential, or on the contrary, like can keep an unwanted transformation from happening. Mm. And why you think that this is ultimately a fantasy.
Mm. Oh, there's a lot. No, it's great. I'm like trying to organize my thoughts, like where to start. But I think, it makes a lot of sense what you're talking. I like that you bring out the care and the chaos. I think yesterday I was really trying to consciously focus that I do at least the objects part. I wanted to somehow, like, I was like, I want to do it in a very careful and like soft way. So it's nice that it came across also, because I felt like these moments I wanted to really take care. And then other moments where the chaos can happen, like let it happen. So it's nice to hear that you saw that also. And I think about the assembling. Yeah, I mean, the piece is called The Myth, and The Myth Last Day, but yeah, The Myth. And I think when it started, when I started the process, I think I was very busy with looking into not specific myths, but just the idea around creating an ideology, maybe, or like a story that could serve as an ideology, or a story that could also, there's different ways of looking at stories. Like you could look at them as something that serves sort of like a purpose for an ideological reason, but it could also be something that just helps to bring out some, I don't know, forgotten voices, forgotten ideas. Like it can work in so many different ways. And I was somehow fascinated, like, when does a story become almost toxic or something like this. I've never used this word in this context, but now it came up, so I was like, okay. But you know what I mean? Does it make sense? Yeah, so like, yeah, how stories can function and how assembling stories also could, yeah, lead to both ways, like you said also, like something that could serve as a coherent thing, that everything sort of falls into place and we all know what we're talking about, and when can it be a confusion or like a noise? So I think the dramaturgy is also a little bit done in a way that the narrative is created while it's also taken apart, or yeah, and that's sort of like a method I am still I think really interested in, like when does a story lose too much that you cannot hold to onto any red thread, and when does it have just enough stuff that you're sort of almost always busy with something like catching up little notions, and when does the fantasy start doing its own work, like filling the gaps or filling the empty blank spaces that I don't talk about or I don't give. It's very cryptic also, the show, sometimes I realized, because I didn't play it for quite a long time, and then I did it again and I was like, wow, sometimes I'm just really cryptic. But I think that came exactly from this fascination of like information versus gaps of information, and what does the imagination do in these moments, how it fills the gaps, and how it wants to fill the gap also to create the coherent story. And yeah, I like that you talked about what if things are assembled in a different way. I never thought of it in that way, actually, but I don't know if I understood you correctly also, but you were mentioning like you started imagining if things would be assembled in a different way, that it would lead to a different, I don't know, world or idea or something like this, or I don't know if I understood you correctly in there.
I think it has a lot to do maybe with like quite banal things or something, but like or like it has more to do perhaps with like assembling yourself or myself in that, and like what do I need to be able to leave the house and do this or that or something, like what objects, in this case like what items of clothing or something, do I need to like complete whatever I bring to this day, and if it's the right, like this fantasy of having like if it's the right like assemblage of like things, then that like sort of holds me together and I can go along my day and do what I have to do or something,
yeah.
Which of course is like just like a, I don't know, like something that, yeah, it's a fiction, but yeah, something about the this I almost would call it a character that you play at some points, like this character is really insistent at some points on certain characteristics or how things are that she sees, and it feels like there is a lot, it has a lot to do with her as a person or with her identity or with her way of life or something, and if the things wouldn't be that way it would be a problem, or she would have to like reconsider what she does as well, or who she is. But yeah, you already touched actually on like my next question, maybe this dichotomy of like information and imagination, or I don't even know if it is a dichotomy or like if one perhaps leads to the next, because like in documenting these items you start off by like describing them quite accurately, I would say, and in detail, like, yeah, like I don't know, like the color, the weight, the texture, but then there always like comes a point, almost like an aha moment or like pretended aha moment, where the character decides she knows exactly what this is. Mm-hmm. There seems to be some leap into fantasy in that moment, or at least something that we as an audience can't know if it's right, and we maybe assume that you couldn't know as well. Like you decide, for example, that the coffee beans are from Brazil,
yeah,
or that the egg is definitely a raw egg, it can't be a hard-boiled egg, it is a raw egg, or that they're like the very long pants and the purse and the egg are part of the same look, like you know it's part of the same look. So I wondered maybe about this like leap from like information to imagination, and how like the like your sensory experience of things, like the touching, the smelling, the looking, can lead to some sort of information that goes beyond the empirical,
mm-hmm,
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. What can I say about it? It's very accurate how you describe it, so I think there's not much to add. But yeah, the leap is a nice moment because it is exactly like yesterday I was talking with a friend or somebody who I just met, and she came to see the show and she said, yeah, I think I figured out what it is about. And I was like, okay, tell me. And then she said, I think it's about research-based art and hard sciences. And I was like, interesting, okay, tell me more. And then she started describing, I think, exactly this difference between hard science and soft science. I don't know if you know, like, anthropology and, like, history are sort of soft sciences. And then, I don't know, physics, for example, is hard science, they call. And she also made a link between the hard-boiled egg and soft egg. And she was like, so it's a battle between, like, hard science and soft science. And I think that is exactly the leap, sort of, that is commonly described, you know, like the hard science or soft science. I also remember one historian saying, like, yes, history cannot be called really a hard science because all you have to do is close your eyes and imagine, and that's all there is. You know, there is not much more to it. Like the everything that is, you base all the knowledge from, it is in the imagination. And I found it also quite interesting because it is, I found it quite true also, like I could relate to that. So yeah, I don't know if I answered the question, but I maybe just elaborated a bit more. Yeah, it's an interesting area, this leap, I think, yeah, when it goes from one to the other. And also it also relates to, for me, this questioning, you know, because sometimes you can question yourself, where do you make these assumptions from, or this, like even like a detective work, you have this information and you have to make some kind of, you come up with a solution through these informations, and still the solution process, it is very subjective. It is something that you as a person sort of fill the gaps or make the leap, so to say. And it can never be taken as hard science, I feel, you know. And I think it's not a problem that it's not, but I think it's more like maybe we should trust more the soft science part of the brain or the leap or something like this.
Yeah, maybe that connects to that a little bit, maybe not, but usually it's not permitted to make at Impulstanz shows to make photographs or video recordings, but you encourage the audience to do that before. It's not, I'm not saying that because it's a rule or something, but it's obviously a choice, and I was wondering about that choice. I assume it has something like it ties in with this notion of like protocoling things or documenting it, maybe, but maybe not now that you. So I was, or was it a simply, yeah.
wow, I love that when sometimes I talk to people and they think everything is like, actually, this is really random. No, it was just like, we were told like, there's going to be this text before, like, hey, welcome to Impulstanz, blah, 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 please do not take the photos. And I was like, hey, but you can take photos, I don't mind. And then they were like, but we cannot take this out from the text. And they were like, but then I can just say before, like, it's fine. But maybe he actually said encouraging. I don't know. I don't know if they encouraged to take photos, but maybe they did. But it was not to do with a documentation sort of field work sort of style. But could be, yeah. I like that you also made this link. I mean, why not? It was more random. It was more random in that moment.
It's very it was very funny actually, because the technician or person who made that announcement, he made it, but people were like a bit like still like in disorder and not like quite like seated yet, so people didn't really hear, and then everybody like started mumbling about like, wait, did he say don't take photos or do take photos? Like, what was it, that or the exact opposite? And then everybody waited for the English version to see what he said. And then again, they didn't really catch it. But yeah, people made made photos and made videos. And I found that kind of interesting to watch, because maybe they wouldn't have taken photos if he wouldn't have said it. But now that they could, they felt like it was almost like necessary, or maybe like part of the thing, or like they would miss something if they wouldn't document it. And then it was very interesting to watch people decide which moments were worth like taking a photo of, or like needed to be documented in that way. Yeah.
I like to see it in that way now. So I'm like, maybe we should make it a thing. I don't know. Because it does fit some other. You see on stage like some kind of weirdo being a researcher playing almost like a kid, you know, and then it is a little bit like meta that the people who are watching also can make these documentations of this, or these little small documentations of this. So I like that you put it in that way. But actually I can tell you also a funny story why it was a little bit hectic yesterday, the Einlass, or the getting in, and the, yeah, no, there was a little problem because I have this tube that I breathe through, and then accidentally it fell into the sand and I couldn't breathe. So I had to come out of the sand and be like, hey, let's stop. And then we buried me again afterwards, because it was first time ever it happened. But thank God people did not yet come in, because I was under there and I was like, everything was fine. And then it did some kind of look, and then it fell into the sand or something, so I didn't have the breathing anymore. So I was like, ooh. And then I just came out. No, but it was nothing bad. Like, I can come out anytime. So it's not like dangerous in that way. But I'm glad that the timing was good, that the people didn't yet come. But maybe it's a funny story for the people to listen and be like, ah, okay.
How long are you under there before you go out usually?
Maybe like 15 minutes, not super long. Yeah, 10-15 minutes.
I don't know, that feels long to me, like the darkness and like the...
Ooh, I have to say, I mean, if you're claustrophobic, then no, but I really like it. It's really cold, the sand is cold, and it gives you like a pressure. It's mm-hmm. really nice feeling. It's like a cold chamber, not cold, but like a little bit chilly sort of chamber with pressure. If everything is going good, it's a really nice experience.
What I also liked about the documenting thing with the audience was that, like, the first half is a very it's in a way it's very theatrically closed off or something, like, and it feels like a very distinct choice. Like, there's an element of like illusory play. You don't really acknowledge the audience, like, as a performer. Sometimes it seems like you're breaking the fourth wall when you're like speaking into the empty space before you, but then like you change position and you answer yourself as a different character, maybe, or like a different aspect of that same character. But it's always like a somewhat closed off world that you like present us until the end, like shortly before your performance, where you open up the space by like literally opening the door to the outside. And at Vuk, it's the door to the actual, not only like the outside of the room, but really like the outside and like daylight poured in. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, do you want to comment maybe on that choice of like opening the door? Because it seemed like a bit of a, like a, how do you say, caesura, like a break or something.
Yeah, I think it was more dramaturgical, that I felt like it needs a change in this moment of the show, because the change from this researcher mode, which is the first half, which is pretty text heavy, and going to the more to the concert, what I call the concert, I felt it just needs also a change in the space. It was that, and also it came also with the fact that the first venue when we ever did it, it got really dusty because it was a bit smaller, and there it was like a relief that we opened the windows and a gulf of breeze came in, and it was just really nice. And the light also somehow added, like, the, yeah, I liked what it did. It gave almost like an more opening up, but also even more intimate somehow. It was a weird combo between, like, by opening the door, things became a bit more intimate. Maybe because of the light, the daylight that pours in. Yeah. But that was the main reason, firstly, behind it, yeah.
Maybe let's talk a bit more about the actual concert itself then. How soon did you know that this was going to be, like, the ending of the show? And I don't know if this is, like, a helpful distinction, but do you think of it as, like, a counterpoint to what comes before? Is it a natural extension to the pseudo archaeology bit of it?
I think, yeah, they complement each other in a important way. Yeah, and it was quite early that I knew that I want to work with both, let's say, qualities. But I think I tried to mix them throughout the show at one point, but then ended up doing more like one and then the other. I think it's a relief for a lot of people when this happens, because the first part can become very like like sometimes I do it even more dry than I did it yesterday, which I like. Sometimes it's humoric for me, but sometimes it's also like you're like, you get even more into some nerdy feeling that it just takes you like a spiral. And then to get out of it through this chaotic venting, I felt it's just like something that you need in that moment, but also complements each other. You know, you start looking at the first half also in a different way maybe, or you start feeling like the first half was holding back something the whole time. And now it came out, or something like this. I don't know. So I felt it really sort of, gives something to each other, this house.
Before seeing the show, I read in your interview with PW Magazine that you were, whenever you like read plays, you're mostly drawn the most to Fosse and Beckett. And at the time, that didn't make, like, I was wondering like how that would be visible in the piece or wouldn't, and then it was extremely visible in a way. Because you mentioned the humor, like it's extreme. Like I think people should, like, it's very funny. It's a very funny show, and especially like the dialogues with yourself are like are very Beckett. I haven't read Jon Fosse actually, but I was wondering how much you thought of it as text, or if it was something that you really like sat down and wrote, because it feels very intricately constructed, just like as a back and forth. Like it doesn't seem, it's not funny because it's random, like it's funny because it's because of the very precise non sequiturs in a way. Mm-hmm. Or if that's something that you just like figured out in the studio while like digging around in the dirt.
No, I had this dialogue come, it's a good question, because it came in different stages. So first it came out through performing the text, sort of appeared, or this style of performing text through a dialogue on your own or something like this. And then, it became like a long session between like, how can I always answer without stopping the topic or changing the topic? Like, how can I always give a next answer and the next question? You know, it became like this. And once I started rehearsing through doing this kind of text, then we sat down with Keiju Krikman, who is part of the team as a text translator and advisor, because there's also an Estonian version of this whole show. And then with Keiju, we sort of just cleaned it and edited it to this stage that it was now. But yeah, this, I think when I work with text, mostly it starts with not writing, but with performing. And then later I find sort of like an angle, how to relate to text. This angle would be like the dialogue form, for example. And I think with a concert portion of the show, the angle was, okay, I want to have very moody, I want to have sometimes that it rhymes and it's more lyrical. So I always need like an angle. And to find that angle, it comes through doing for me more. I don't really enjoy sitting down and writing, but I do work a lot with text, so it might sound contradicting, but I think that's more the method for me. And then later I start editing maybe with somebody who is better at text.
It actually reminded me in some parts, I don't know if you saw it, because it was also at Volksbühne where you performed Ja, nichts ist okay by Polish, the last play. Because Fabian Hinrichs, it's a monologue mostly, and he also has these long stretches where he like performs like three people living in like a VG, I don't know what the and he performs like every one of them, and there's like, it's also extremely extremely funny, but it's, I feel like it does a lot that there is this like 3 seconds gap from like saying something, then having to go, like he does like a couple of steps, you mostly like turn and then have like but you always have like a moment where you like, especially in the beginning where the characters aren't directly next to each other, like you always go over and like you look at the wall for like a full second and then you turn around and you answer. And something about this like really changes the way I listen to the text, because you have like it makes it like possible to read it both as a dialogue but also like just as like just a sentence or something. That was something I don't know if you want to.
No, I mean, it's just really nice to hear, because sometimes I'm like, am I doing it too slow? are people fucking bored now? Like, sometimes I wonder. But it's good to hear that you noticed it, and for you it worked, at least sometimes. So I'm like, yeah, because when it came when I first, like, I found this dialogue, it was really, I did it even slower. And I felt like how the walk was almost the time when me and the people who are witnessing we all, like, what's the word, like, we process almost, like, every word that was just said. And then you can answer to either one word or the whole sentence. And then, yeah, it's like a deconstructive way a little bit. Yeah.
And that actually brings me to some, because, like, that moment when you, like, look at the wall, it comes out, like, the first time you do it, like, I it was, like, something different from, like, I actually, like, I debate, like, I almost don't want to talk about Uma in a way, because like, it seems like, yeah, no, but it seems, like, such a, like, perfectly nonsensical, but, like, very appropriately, like, mysterious presence in a way. So maybe we can, I don't know, if it doesn't interest you to talk about it, we can cut it out as well. But the moment that I really thought about a lot was that first moment where, like, Uma does, like, the first round, mm-hmm. and you say, I think you say, hello, who's there, or something, and you walk across the stage, and it really, like it reads as, like, you talking to Uma, and then you do, like, this second, but then you turn around and you play this different character, and then this dialogue, you enter into this dialogue with yourself, but it kind of led to this pause of, like, going over and looking at the wall. I almost, like, read it as, like, there was something very strange, but, like, almost like an excuse to go over there and to look for the, like, this weird, like, presence, but then, like, having to almost, like, overplay it, that you're, like, maybe, you know what I mean? Like, that there was, like, there was something eerie about it. Yeah, to, like, I don't, like, I'm just here to, like, talk with myself, but I know there's something else, and I kind of want to check, but I don't want people to notice that I check. So maybe, like, I don't want to ask for, like, a symbolic meaning of this presence, but I feel like their presence is very much, like, structured around your presence on stage, and I would be interested, like, just, like, on a performer level, how you two interact without ever physically interacting.
Yeah, I think the first time I thought of that it would be nice to have someone on the stage with me, it was also because I was working with this topic of also, yeah, critique or questioning, or, like, not being 100%, not taking myself 100% serious, and not believing everything you think or everything you say, you know, like when somebody just pulls the carpet out of your under your feet. So I felt like it would be cool to have a performer who is sort of independent, that I don't almost know what they're doing behind me or in front of me. And then my first idea was, like, they're just there, like, judging me, like, just, like, staring at me and being sometimes like, oh my God, like, I wanted this presence that just somehow brings this doubt into the space, or at least for me as a performer. And then I invited Johan Rosenberg, who I just trust his intuition, like, 100% as a performer. So I was like, okay, he can pull it off. And our rehearsals were like, I just showed what I do, and he was like, okay, let me just try to be a little bit around you. And then also yesterday he was like, yeah, I did something new. I was like, what? You don't need to know. I'm like, okay, I don't know. So it's just a really good feeling as a director to be like, there's an element in here that I have no idea what's going on. But I think he has a more strict structure for himself now, so he's not so much improvising. But I think it also adds to this idea of, like, creating a story while deconstructing it a little bit. So you're creating an almost like another person through these objects that you find. It almost builds up as a person. You have the pants, you have the bag. And I think I just wanted to mess it up a little bit more, that it doesn't become too clear, like, yeah, I'm creating this person, but it's also, there's also a ghost, actually, like, and maybe we should talk about ghosts. Maybe that's the soft science that needs to be investigated more. Maybe the ghost knows the truth, the actual truth. So I treat Uma a little bit like a ghost, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Lastly, I think I want to, like, it's not your first time at Impulstanz, of course, because you've been here as part of Florentina Holzinger's cast for both Apollon, I think, and then Tanz. Yeah. And you are also tour with Ophelia's Got Talent and Sanctum. And so I wanted to ask a bit about your work in that, like, in these, like, big productions, and in that very, like, what seems like a very, like, solid team or something, or like almost like a circus type team.
Yeah.
And how these big productions are, if your work in them is somehow like in conversation with your solo work, or how you think about them.
I think the conversation is smaller than you would think. But not in a bad way, but exactly in a good way, because it's like a perfect combo for me to be involved with Flo and at the same time have my own work, because it is like, it's a very different way of working, especially because when I make things, I like to do it in small groups. I'm not so good with a lot of people and managing all of them, and Flo is exactly excellent in that, and I'm like, I take myself strictly as a performer with Flo more. I mean, of course, we're friends, and when we talk about stuff, we might like bounce ideas and whatever. But when we work, I like to have this, that I'm more like a performer. It makes more sense for me. And yeah, we have so much like people in this team. Like if everybody starts becoming like very collaborative, it just gets crazy. So we also want that there's like one person who is in the end like, no, let's do like this. So I think this dynamic has formed over time in a nice way. And yeah, I think that makes already such a big difference between when I work on my own stuff, because I'm very engaged in a different way. Like it's just, as a director or as a choreographer is such a different position than a performer. And I think the way we do stuff is so different with Flo, but we share a similar humor, which is also quite funny to see. And I mean, I learn a lot through years by working in big productions, of course, and that is a really nice thing to see.
And maybe I want to ask you what you're working on right now, if there is already a new piece.
Yeah, actually now we started a new process. It's going all very slow, but I'm happy that it goes slow. And I started sort of more like a trio situation between me as a performer, Mikaela Kisling, who is from Vienna, she's a sound artist, and then Pira Sova, who did the scenography for this myth. She will do performing, sort of, she will make scenography live. We want to try something like this as a format. So anyway, we're starting a little bit of the process for that now. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Thank you for talking to me. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you to Volkstheater as well for letting us record here. And yeah, I hope you have a great last show.
Thanks so much. Yes. Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to the Attention Young Choreographers Series podcast. To never miss a new episode, follow us on Spotify, Podcast Addict, or Deezer. For more artist conversations, visit our websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsedance.com.